Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 74 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as always, or as usual. And I have a really interesting guest today, Ross Albers. Ross is an attorney here in Maryland, in the central northern part of Maryland, for those of you not located in the state. And Ross has developed his solo practice now into a small firm, employing some non-legal staff members and an associate. He now occupies two different offices. And we're going to hear how Ross attributes a lot of his success to the early employment or the early use of a business coach, something that many attorneys turn to later in the life cycle of their law firm. Very few do so early in the game as Ross did. And maybe there's a lot to be said for that because he's certainly doing real well and expanding his practice as we speak. So it's a really interesting interview, I think, and I hope you enjoy it. So without any further delay, here is Ross Albers. Ross Albers, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Ross, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, sure. So I've had my law practice for about 2.5 years now. And, you know, 2 weeks before I got married, I came home one night and told my wife that I was going to be losing my job. But it was okay because I was going to start my own law firm. And she was not super pleased with that, considering
the timing.
Still decided
to marry you, huh?
Still went through it. Well, I think at that point it was a destination wedding, and everything had been paid for, so you might as well go to the Dominican Republic and
get the trip out of it,
and then you could always run from the altar. But that was a very that was a scary conversation to basically say, you were losing your job but you were going to go out and start something from scratch. And so to go from, having a salary and an income to making zero is it was a scary moment. So, so we did get married, we came back, and I basically just started from scratch and, started my own little practice from my dining room table and would meet and travel around and meet clients wherever I could to, today. Now we have, two offices and, two employees. So it's been it's definitely been a journey and one that I certainly like sharing with other people to, help them along the way and show them that, if you do the right things, you'll be on the right track and you can make this work.
Well, let's go back to that eventful day that has both trepidation and joy mixed in, a new career and a new marriage. And let's talk. So, you're in the category of the folks that got thrust into the position of deciding whether or not to open their own law firm by circumstances. Had you entertained the idea, the thought ahead of that, or was it just when the shoe fell, you decided, okay, this is what I'm gonna do?
I had definitely been entertaining it, and I think that's part of the reason why I ended up losing my job.
Uh-huh.
But to say that, I had everything in place and it was just a matter of turning the switch on and I was ready to go is definitely not a description of the process at all. But no, I you know, and I look now to, you know, friends of mine and other people I meet who, you know, are thinking about taking that leap, but it's not easy to just voluntarily sort of just say, all right, I'm going to go and do my own thing. I think when you get, you know, kicked out the door and you have nowhere else to land, then it's scary, but I think it almost becomes easier because you have no other choice but to try to succeed.
Yeah. I think that works for a lot of people because, you know, for some of them, for some folks who say have a long landing strip or ramp up, if you will, they may be less motivated to do what's necessary, you know, but if you've got a new marriage to deal with and expectations along those lines, you've got to perform, you've got to do what it takes. And so that pressure is a necessary motivator, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was no other choice. So I knew that if I was going to make this work, I had to start right away trying to find business, trying to find clients, trying to find ways to make money because, you know, every 2 weeks, the direct deposit was not going to come into the bank account. And I think that when you have sort of have that motivation versus the thought of, well, I'm thinking about it. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, well, I still have my job, you know, then it's much harder. And I think it is a lot easier when you, you know, have that sort of nudge and, you know, maybe unforeseen or foreseen event that happens that all of a sudden now you're a solo practitioner.
So did you know what area of law you wanted to practice?
Well, I mean, I knew what I had experience in. I had been a prosecutor in Baltimore City for about, I think, a little over 3 years. So I knew how to do criminal law. I also, you know, knew I could handle, you know, DUI and traffic. And I also had some experience handling personal injury. So I basically knew that I could do criminal and personal injury. And those were going to be the two areas that I primarily focused on. And it's funny, you know, when I went out on my own, my first thought was, I have to do everything. I've got to do family law. I got to learn how to write wills. I've got to, you know, do contracts. And what I need to do is go sit at the library and learn how to do all these things. And I read in a book along the way, sort of my journey, that sometimes when you narrow your focus, you broaden your appeal. And so as opposed to being the guy that does everything, I think it would be better to be the guy that's known for, well, he does this or he does that. And so I quickly kind of shifted from, well, I'm going to take family law cases to, nope, I do criminal and I do auto accidents. And those are my two areas. And that, you know, I think when you narrow your focus, you broaden your appeal.
Well, and I think also what's interesting about the focus that you've narrowed down on is that, you know, inherently that, you know, there's always going to be a market for criminal defense work, you know, sadly, in some respects. And there's always going to be a need for personal injury attorneys. Now, because of that, the competition is pretty tough. So how do you deal with that factor?
Yeah, you know, I was actually just talking about this the other night when I was doing a speaking engagement, and that, you know, an estate planning attorney like yourself, every single person in the world needs an estate planning attorney. You go to a restaurant and have dinner, that restaurant is filled with people that need you as a client, you know, or need you as an attorney right now. They need help. They need that estate. They need that will. They need that, you know, power of attorney. And for me, everyone in that restaurant or everyone at that fair or whatever does not necessarily need the criminal defense attorney or the personal injury attorney right now. Something in their life happens that then causes them to need that attorney. And I think both areas for yourself and for me are struggles, you know, you convincing people to, hey, come get that will right now, and versus them saying, well, I'll just put it off. And, you know, me convincing that, hey, I'm the guy to come see, when there's, you know, 500 other people, you know, saying, oh, no, you need to talk to this guy. So, you know, that, you know, I know that I'm in one of the most competitive markets, and a lot of the solos out there are, you know, criminal defense, personal injury type of guys. But I just, you know, I just decided, you kind of have to, you separate your sort of self in, you know, I think people are buying you, and the people are buying, being comfortable with you, liking you. And, you know, I think if you can, you know, earn their respect and their trust, I think that goes a long way. And then that ultimately kind of creates other relationships and referrals. And so that's just sort of what I focused on, was just being genuine and not trying to be, you know, a hard seller or a super salesman, and just being real with people and telling them what I honestly thought was going to happen or not going to happen in their case.
So let's start. So there you are at the dining room table with your laptop, trying to get the law office off the ground. And how did you first let folks know that you were, you know, hanging your shingle, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, being a criminal defense attorney, having been in the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office, I had seen other guys go out on their own. And so I sort of was trying to mimic and copy what they had done. And what I think a lot of people do is they immediately reach out to the public defender's office, and they're looking for, you know, what's called panel cases, cases where they have a conflict and they can't handle it. So they have to send it out to an attorney to handle that case. And so, you know, in my mindset, that was what I needed to do, was reach out to every public defender's office that I knew and get on their list and start getting cases. And that ultimately is what I did. It got me off the ground and, you know, started making me earn a little bit of money and got me in court and got my name out there and seeing people and seeing other attorneys, knowing that I'm out on my own. So that's the first thing I did. But looking back on it now, I don't know that I would have necessarily changed that strategy, but there's other things that I would have definitely implemented that I didn't do right off the bat.
Yeah, so you started taking panel cases and just letting people know that you were out there and starting networking in the legal community. What's the next big step that you took?
The next big step is I hired a business coach.
Really?
Yeah, a friend of mine had told me right when I went out on my own that you need to talk to my coach. He can help you. And I pushed him off and said, no, I don't need to talk to him. Basically thinking, listen, I can't afford to do that. I don't have the money. And eventually I'd say about 6 months into my practice, when you start to kind of get the wheel turning, where you're getting new cases, you're closing out old cases, money's coming into the operating account, and you start to get a little bit more comfortable. And so I took that meeting with the business coach, and I would say it absolutely changed my practice and changed my life.
Well, you know, what I find interesting about that is very few attorneys that I've spoken to on this show have taken advantage of a business coach that early in the life cycle of their firm. You know, well, oftentimes it comes after a few years of struggling or maybe a few years of success, but very seldom does the attorney have the foresight to hire a business coach early in the process. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. And honestly, I wish I had done it the day I got back from my wedding and just hired the business coach, because I think, you know, his name is David Kelly of the Growth Coach of Greater Baltimore, and him and his partner, Barbara Larrabee. I wish I had reached out to them day one and said, I'm starting a business. What do I need to do? And looking back on it now, they really kind of set me straight, because I think everyone sort of has grand visions of what they want their firm to be when they first go out on their own, or I want to do this or I want to do that. But no one really, do you execute every single day and take action to try to achieve what that vision is? And I can tell you, when I was doing, you know, in court Monday through Friday, morning and afternoon, sometimes in two different places in the morning and two different places in the afternoon, I was not doing the type of activities that were going to make my vision for what my firm, what I wanted it to be. I just wasn't. And I think they really kind of opened my eyes up to that and were very blunt about it, which I certainly could appreciate.
Well, that's interesting. We had Ingar Greve, who was on our show a while ago, and I'll come up with the episode number a while ago. He's part of the Growth Coach Network as well. So our listeners, if they've heard that entity before, that's probably from the Ingar Greve interview. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. Well, that sounds great. So you started focusing on more business related or marketing related or operations related or all the above issues as a result of your work with David Kelly.
A little bit of all of the above. I think he would ask, well, what do you love about having a business? And I said, well, I have so much freedom. I can do whatever I want. And what else? So I can make as much money as I want. And then when he asked me, well, what do you do all day? And I explained to him what I did. He said, well, you don't have as much freedom as you think you do. And you can't make as much money as you think you can, because there's only you and you can only do so much. And he really sort of opened my eyes to the idea of working on your business and not working in it. You know, he explained to me and showed me that I really was just an employee of a law firm. It happened to have my name on the door, but I was just an employee. I wasn't truly a business owner. And business owners, these are the things that they do. And for me, one of the first things he told me to do was, okay, you do personal injury or you do DUI, find your counterparts out there or your partners or people that don't do those areas of law or people that treat people that are in accidents and meet with them and develop a referral network and get to know them. And one of the first things I did was go around here in Carroll County where I live and meet every chiropractor and take them out to lunch and get to know them. And sure enough, within, 30, 60, 90 days, they were referring me business. And it was such an eye-opening experience that it made me realize, how do I spend all of my time doing that and, building my practice? So I focused a ton on networking. And then as you, accumulate more work and cases, now you've got to put the systems in place to handle all of that work. And so I think that was sort of the next step for me, was identifying a process for, okay, well, here's how we handle these cases now.
Interesting. So did you, when you put the systems in place, is that something you started documenting in like an operations manual, or how did you kind of implement that process?
Yeah, so I use a wonderful online case management program called My Case. It basically is a portal for all of your cases that your clients can log into their individual case. And within each or within my case, you can create systems called workflows. So say you sign up a new personal injury case, you can have a workflow that says personal injury intake. And these are the steps that we do after we sign up, you know, said case. And you can basically assign that workflow to your employees. You could do the same thing for, you know, a settlement in a personal injury case. Okay, here's what happens when the settlement check comes. Here are the steps that we take. And so it's not so much a manual in paper as it is online built within my practice. And, you know, that's something I work on and develop and tinker with constantly. But I think with the way sort of the practice law is evolving, That's how I use it. And my case is sort of where I keep my processes and, you know, policies.
I think it's a great way to try and standardize the firm's approach and workflow. You know, I have a practice management tool that, you know, fortunately they're a sponsor of this program. That would be Daylight by Market Circle. And they have similar kinds of processes. They have pipelines and other workflows that you can document a series of steps, tasks, even automate the emails or messages that are associated with each of those steps or tasks. And it's a great way to kind of structure the workflow and ensure that it happens on a, you know, each and every case. That's how we do handle matters, and that's how we process the case. So that's great. So you worked on, you know, initially networking and building up your referral base, and then went into the process of documenting systems for how you wanted things done. What were the big challenges along the way?
I think I'll tell you, you know, the challenges for me are, you know, self-limiting beliefs. You know, telling myself and convincing myself that I can't do something, or I don't have enough money to do that, or, oh, I'm not a big enough firm to do that, or, oh, no, that person would never work with me, or they're never going to send me any cases, so it's not worth meeting them. And just sort of just these self-limiting beliefs and convincing myself that something was true when I really had no clue if that was the case or not. And, you know, that's something I struggle with. And I think a lot of solo practitioners do, and business people just in general, is just, well, I can't do something. And that for me has been the biggest struggle. Oh, I could never afford to hire that legal assistant, or no, there's no way I need that person full time now, and things like that. So those are the biggest struggles, just telling yourself that you're not capable of doing something when in reality you really don't know that to be true.
You know, that self-limiting belief problem I see again with the people that I interview on this show mostly manifests itself in terms of staffing. It's a great leap of faith to reach the conclusion that you need to hire somebody in many cases. So tell us a little bit about staffing, how you went about staffing, how you made that decision, and then how you fulfilled your staffing needs.
You know, the first thing I did was I kind of sat down and wrote down for a week everything that I was doing and identifying what was clutter work, things that were eating up a lot of my time, and figuring out, okay, what are these tasks? And if I bring somebody in and now they take those tasks over and do that, how much time does it free up in my day? Oh, well, it frees up, you know, an hour or two or three. And initially, I kind of started slow. I had someone just a couple hours a week come in. And then eventually, you have this epiphany when you bring somebody on and they free up all this time for you. And then next thing you know, you're actually making more money. When you thought to yourself, oh man, I'm gonna lose money because now I have to pay somebody. And you look back and you're like, wow, this freed up my time for all of this other stuff now. And so I initially just started off getting assistant to help with sort of, you know, just opening the mail and scanning it. I mean, that in and of itself could take me hours to do. And instead of taking that meeting and meeting that attorney or the chiropractor or whoever, I'm sitting at a desk at a scanner scanning in mail.
Not exactly the most efficient use of your time.
No, not the most efficient use of my time. And not to say that it's a valuable thing. It has to happen. It keeps the firm growing, but it's not what a CEO does. And so that is sort of where it started, just kind of identifying clutter work and tasks and how can I assign this to someone else? And then, you know, it's grown to now we have a full-time associate attorney and, you know, he can come on and free up my time in terms of having to go to court or having to, you know, answer questions for clients. And, you know, now that gives me more time to go out there and develop the business. So it's grown from there, identifying your activities, sitting down for a week and writing down everything you did and figuring out where all your time is going and then figuring out who are you going to assign it to.
So obviously along the way you decided you needed to move out of the dining room and into some space. So tell us about that journey. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, that makes me think back to one of the first books I read when I got out on my own called Selling the Invisible. And there's a quote in that book or a passage that says, the longer your office says struggling attorney, the longer the struggle. And I really kind of took that to heart. And I thought to myself, I said, I'm working out of my dining room table. I'm sitting in my living room. This is the definition of a struggling attorney. And so it evolved into, okay, well, now I have a small 250 square foot office where I can meet people. And now I have an office. So I'm an attorney that has an office now. Then it turned into, I think it's a little weird when people walk in and the door hits my desk. I probably should get an office that's a little bit bigger. And so you move upgrade to the 750 square foot office. And then, you know, eventually you look around one day and you say, if I'm going to grow any bigger and I need more people, I don't have the space to put them. So I need a workplace where I have space to put more people. And so you move into the 13 square foot office. So, you know, that's where we are today. And, you know, now I look around and I think to myself, I'm like, how long are we going to be here? Because with my vision and how I want things to go and how they have grown, shoot, we might not be here for that full 2-year lease. You know, we might be calling the landlord and saying, hey, we need you to knock down a wall or we need a bigger space. So I really think back to that quote of, you know, the longer your office says struggling attorney, the longer the struggle.
Yeah, that that book, Selling the Invisible, that's the one by Harry Beckwith.
Yeah.
And, you know, just as an aside, there's a number of great, great YouTube videos that people can watch if they want to get a sense of what's contained in that book and how to apply that to their own business. I know that's one day I got on a YouTube binge and that was a series of YouTubes that I watched. So now you've got staff, you've got a new office space and you're building the practice on a daily basis. What's the future hold for you? Where do you think you're going?
Yeah, my vision for my firm is to have, you know, we already have multiple offices. We have another office in Columbia, Maryland. I look at a place like Frederick, Maryland as a place that I would like to expand to. So I see us having, you know, multiple offices throughout Maryland, and then looking at a place like Virginia and even Pennsylvania, and growing into a regional firm, and then growing into, we could be a nationwide litigation firm. And that's sort of ultimately my vision. How do we get there and do that? Well, I think part of my strategy right now is looking at mergers and acquisitions. I think you look at a lot of law firms in Maryland or around the country, they grew by merging or acquiring other practices. And that's the strategy of mine now, to identify other solo practitioners and perhaps see if they'd like to become part of my organization. And then also identifying attorneys that perhaps are nearing the end of their career and wanting to transition out, and approaching them and saying, hey, I'd be interested in buying your practice and having a transition for you versus just one day deciding that you're going to turn the phone off and you're done. So that's the vision I have now. And now that I have, I've freed more of my time up, that's how I'm spending my days, is identifying those potential prospects.
Great. What role does social media and technology play in this process of expanding your empire?
I enjoy writing and blogging. My parents are both journalists, so I grew up amongst writers, and so I enjoy blogging. But I think nowadays, too, part of my strategy is every blog should have a YouTube video associated with it, to the point where I even went on Amazon and for, I don't know, $1,100, bought the video production equipment, a couple lights, a green screen, and a camera. And, you know, can sit here and make my own videos and then have them produced. That's part of my strategy. I'm also a big fan of a guy like Grant Cardone, you know, the 10 times rule and Boba and sort of saying, you know, you need to be out there in front of people on a daily basis. They need to know who you are. They need to see you constantly. So when something comes up, they're always reminded of you. So I think social media plays that role for me as well. I would also say testimonials and reviews are a huge part of my practice and something that I covet and we work hard for and we ask and follow up for as well.
Well, you know, we probably should do this all over again and just talk about your video production capability and how you're able to integrate video onto your website, because I think that's really the future for legal website these days. And you've got a whole slew of YouTube videos, as you said, associated with your blog posts.
Yeah. People perhaps have a self-limiting belief of, oh, that must cost so much money to do that. Or that, how could you possibly afford, or how do you have time to do that? And it's like, well, I spent, $1,100, $1,200 on a nice camera and a stand and a green screen and the lights. I mean, they have bundles on Amazon. You go and you buy it, you set it up, you write a blog, and then you condense it into a 45 or a minute and a half of you just talking to the camera. Fortunately, I'm lucky enough to have a younger brother who is very good at video editing and production and who will do it for me. But they have services online that you can do it very easily, or you can just, you know, go to your local community college and reach out to them and find a kid in the production program that wants to build his portfolio and say, hey, you know, I want you to produce some videos for me. I want them to look like this. And once you get a template down, all it is just filming a new video and then inserting it into your template, and then you're done. And so I think you just have to be creative and sort of think outside the box. And again, it's a self-limiting belief that, oh, it must cost a lot of money to do that, when in fact, you can pretty much do it for free.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great strategy, and I think it will bode well for your continued success and expansion. So, Ross, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Tell our audience a little bit how they might go about reaching out to you and following up if they're so inclined.
Yeah, I'm always interested in meeting other attorneys that don't do the areas of law that I do to see if we might be able to add each other to our referral networks. You can visit our website at rossalbers.com. Our phone number is 443-457-3890. Or you could always just email me at ross@rossalbers.com.
Well, that's perfect. Well, I wish you the best of luck, and let's stay in contact going forward.
Would love to, absolutely.
Thanks for being on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.